I find myself in something of a quandary. As I gaze languidly from my office across the Wye Valley to the Black Mountains beyond, I recognise I'm in the company of millions of others who, for some days past, have, at our government's request, been obligingly self-isolating. In other words, staying out of circulation in, and here's a new term, a lockdown. The ramifications of this mean that, other than for occasional jaunts to acquire food, from shelves stripped bare as if by locusts, or locusts with a serious bowel problem, it would seem, from the empty toiletry section, to take exercise, one session a day, mind you, or for medical requirements, we must remain in our hermetic bubbles at no closer than 2 metres from our fellow humans, who may in any event be unrecognisable behind a face mask and other personal protection paraphernalia. The reason for all of this, you guessed, is the coronavirus pandemic of 2020, a newly emerged virus officially tagged COVID-19, dubbed by the popular media and with no originality whatsoever as the silent killer. From heart attacks to carbon monoxide poisoning, how many of those are there now? COVID-19 first subtly pinged the radar in China sometime late 2019, early 2020. Within days, and aided greatly in its travels by our modern transport systems, it had embarked on its merciless march round the globe, inflicting severe respiratory symptoms and, for those of great age or with underlying medical conditions, more stark consequences, including an unpleasant death. And therein lies my quandary. The media world is ablaze with a reportage. So, on the one hand, recognising there are those far more eminently qualified than I to comment on a debate that is already massively oversubscribed, I am reticent to cloud the waters by chucking in my own 2 pence. However, as one whose CV includes the description writer and broadcaster, for the sake of credibility, I feel duty-bound to contribute something to what is one of the most significant world events in my lifetime. Compounding my dilemma is the millstone of an otherwise flattering epithet as an observer of the unusual and the arcane. So, that settles it. Stage directions for film version. Author turns to computer keyboard and with half sigh of resigned acceptance commences typing. I can offer but a snapshot of how affairs stand since A, we are told this pandemic is unprecedented, which, as I will clarify shortly, is hardly accurate, and B, because it is a new variant, so any forecast is riddled with uncertainty. Thus, best to consider this as an entry in my diary on an unspecified day, though the latest news that our Prime Minister is imminently dispatching a letter to every house in the land may help nail it close to the nearest one. Largely as a consequence of those who imagined they know better, or who grabbed the opportunity as some perverse justification for defiance, the government request to self-isolate has, after just a few hours, been reinforced by the more compulsive introduction of police powers of enforcement, powers that we are assured, natch, will only be exercised under extreme circumstances. This is good old Blighty after all. And, other than for the occasional aforementioned transgressors, our traditional British stiff upper lip has anecdotally rendered us more acquiescent to authority than Johnny Foreigner. Yet these are early days, and there is the prospect of many more diktats to come before the sirens sound the all clear. The consequence of this is that our tiny hamlet, the decibels measurement of which rarely enters double figures, is even more pointedly quiet, with passers-by reduced to a level that statisticians would describe as effectively zero. Bliss! At least this aspect of our quarantine is not burdensome. Living with a mother who, by dint of her age, requires an extra degree of caution, and with my other half and I no longer being in the first flush of youth, we are sufficiently stocked, not stockpiled, I hasten to add, with fuel and essentials to the point we needn't worry too much just yet about venturing past the gate. And so, in true bulldog spirit, we're making the most of our lot by looking for a bright side. Our incarceration offers more quality time together, We all get along very well, but tensions in the closest of families may fester under such conditions, so the fact that they have yet to do so means, even in these difficult times, I have grounds to consider myself fortunate. In the longer term, cabin fever may set in, so we are already planning a programme of tasks and activities to mitigate the likelihood. In years to come, this will doubtless be regarded as a period in history, an interesting area of social research. Right now, for those living through it, this nasty little virus is holding the entire world in a grip of uncertainty as frantic attempts are made to reduce transmission, stymie its effects, and find a vaccine. To suggest it could lead to an overwhelming of our domestic systems is no exaggeration. It has elsewhere. It knows no barriers and is indiscriminate in its attack. From commoners to royalty, even our Prime Minister and members of his government. Although there is an undeniable irony in suggestions that the latter may have contracted the virus by breaching their own isolation rules. It will take some time for us to return to how life was like pre-COVID-19, if indeed we ever do. One thing is for sure, I predict with confidence a spike in the world of esoterics. Artists are notoriously creative in adversity. It's what helps define our humanity. Worrying as all this may be, the situation is not unique, and as I implied earlier, history is strewn with epidemics and pandemics right back to the dawn of civilization. In 430 BC, the city of Athens experienced a typhoid-like epidemic that lasted for 5 years. Moscow was ravaged in the 1770s, as was Marseille around the same time. America has suffered several crippling epidemics since the days of the Founding Fathers. In the 21st century, Africa has been blighted by Ebola. On the grander scale of pandemics, the Black Death of the 14th century decimated around half the population in its wake from Asia to Europe. The Spanish flu of 1918 killed an estimated 50 million people from the South Seas to the North Pole, whilst in the 1950s, Asian flu claimed over 1 million lives. More recently, we have seen, amongst others, H1N1 swine flu and, of course, HIV/AIDS. Understandably, there are those who point to the death toll from COVID-19 being, for now, far less than what is sustained during a seasonal flu epidemic. But such simplicity is to miss the point. Existing illnesses follow patterns that have subsequently been analysed and are thus, to a degree, predictable in what scientists call its curve of progress. This novel COVID-19 has not yet fully yielded its parameters. Furthermore, unlike the days of pandemics from 100 years ago, our systems of communications and transportation are an Achilles heel. Whilst our medicines and vaccines are at levels incompatible with the past, the ability for infection to be inadvertently transported far and wide very quickly means that we may be thrown onto the back foot before a treatment gets its boots on. So, bearing in mind this is a snapshot of how matters seem to me right now, what is the global reaction? Well, surprisingly, in view of us all facing a common threat that one would reasonably imagine justifies a coordinated response, and notwithstanding our unprecedented ability to communicate instantly, the messages are mixed. Each continent or major bloc is exercising its own interpretations. Even members of the European Union, never a group known for its rapid decision-making, are reportedly being distracted by internecine disagreements. Whilst regrettable, it is understandable if one delves into the roots of its players. A nation's values and mores are inevitably based on a core philosophy that has been extant and specific to that nation since earliest times. No one group should claim intellectual or moral superiority over another, and we are better advised to understand the differences if we are to constructively engage rather than create conflict by exacting one upon another in some futile gesture of eminence. The West's attempts to impose democracy upon lands that historically have entertained no concept of the democracy we're seeking to impose is ample testament to that. The American right to bear arms is sacrosanct, albeit its original interpretation as being insecurity of a free state, has since been mangled almost beyond recognition, lies at the heart of that nation's concept of freedom. Thus does President Trump fly full in the face of scientific advice in suggesting Americans will soon be free, note the word, to resume their normal lives within a hopelessly optimistic timescale that is recognised by no one else in possession of an IQ numerically larger than their shoe size. Compare and contrast with China and the Far East, where the teachings of, notably Confucius, manifest themselves in a model of serenity and order. Then consider how that order is routinely reinforced by suppression of the facts. In Indo-Aryan culture, the ancient epic Sanskrit texts of Ramayana and Mahabharata underpin the liturgy of Hinduism, Buddhism, and Jainism. The innate karma is the sum of a person's actions and previous states of existence that decides their fate in future existences. In the light of these disparities, it's hardly surprising that nations may find issue in identifying a common datum. Mercifully, unlike in the past, we have expansive means to maximise the potential to draw together as closely as our dissimilarities permit. We will pull through this pandemic, of that I am sure, and I do not wish to appear glib in suggesting society has done so before and will one day have to do so again. My greatest apprehension here is the loss of life incurred by the time that we do. Another concern is the pernicious effects of lockdown, a distasteful term that, although broadly tolerable in the circumstances, is already attracting the attentions of the civil rights movement. The UK is one of the most surveilled nations on earth, yet who will be the first to suggest that, for our greater safety, certain elements of lockdown should be retained after the contagion is arrested? Those who hold power are disinclined to relinquish it. Unless this seems implausible, consider the parlous state of Turkish liberties since their widespread suppression following the 2016 attempted coup d'etat. Will we ever fully trust our government and leaders again? And how will this ultimately impinge upon our democracy? In his 2018 interview with the BBC's Evan Davis, Sir David Attenborough again spoke about unsustainable population growth and the urgent need to address it. All of our environmental problems become easier to solve with fewer people, he said. Fair point. But not like this, Sir David. Surely not like this.